Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we're going to be talking about Utah's Government Records Access and Management Act, or GRAMA. Senate Assistant Majority Whip Senator Mike McKell and other legislators say the state's open records process needs an overhaul. The Utah Media Coalition and others say the system is working and that proposed changes would make it harder for citizens to find out what state government and other governments are doing. We're going to be talking this hour with Eric Peterson, who is Executive Director of the Utah Investigative Journalism Project. Eric, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Peterson, Executive Director of the Utah Investigative Journalism Project. We want to talk about Utah's Government Records Access and Management Act, or GRAMA. This is the law that governs how citizens get records from government, get to see the records from government. First of all, Eric Peterson, tell us how this works. I guess currently there'll be changes we're going to talk about, potential changes, but, private citizen or you at the Investigative Journalism Project or, media, how do you go about it at this point?
Well, with using GRAMA?
Using GRAMA, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, so GRAMA, the Government Records Access and Management Act, and, it is a tool that is for all Utahns, not just reporters, any member of the public who wants to request records about what a government agency is doing. They essentially just need to fill out a form. It can even be an email to the right kind of records officer, or you could go to an online portal, the Utah Open Records portal, create a free account, and it makes it super easy to file these. But essentially, if you're curious about something with government, how your taxpayer dollars are being spent, you can file a request and you can access records that could be, emails, it could be budget documents, it could be investigative reports. It's just the law that governs our ability to kind of, you're curious about something, you want to scratch that itch, you file these requests and you can get that information. That's the very simplified version of it, of course. I could, be a lot more into detail about how that process works if you want, but essentially that's it. You're filing a request just to access government documents that affect, the public's business.
And my understanding is, Eric, that we hear about media, they want to investigate. But a lot of private citizens are curious, what city council is getting up to, or, any number of things, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, one of the things we've wondered is trying to figure out a good sense of how many records requests are filed by journalists versus the public, for example. That's something that I've been curious about through my nonprofit. I know the Utah Media Coalition has been curious about. It's kind of a hard number to track down, but we do know that with records appeals, when you file records requests, you may get denied the records and you may appeal that up to the state records committee. And, a strong number of the records appeals, going to the state records committee, for example, are from citizens. So it is a lot of people, there are a lot of people that are just curious, about, proposed projects their city might be working on. They want to know how it's going to affect their property taxes. They want to get more information, different things like that. A lot of people are filing, GRAMA requests with police departments when it comes to maybe an accident or a crime that affects them, things like that.
So let's talk about legislation here. You've outlined very well the current process that might be changing. The couple of bills here. Let me. I'm looking at a piece you wrote on the Utah Investigative Journalism Project site. The headline is Spending Your Tax Dollars to Hide Government Secrets. Let's start with House Bill 69. So this has to do with the process goes to the Records Committee, and then you might go to court, right, if you're denied.
Right. So just to back up to explain that kind of like appeal process a little more, like you might file a records request, you might get denied, and there's various reasons why, you know, a record shouldn't be made public. You might disagree with that and you might file an appeal. That appeal might go, you know, from the agency you're requesting the records from to this independent body, the State Records Committee, and then potentially to court. Or, you know, there's an option to take it to court sooner, like if you feel like that's necessary. And as it stands now in the law, if you have to take a records battle to court, if you take a records battle to court and you prevail, then your attorney fees can be awarded to your attorneys for, you know, fighting that battle and succeeding. And that's an important thing. It's a really important thing for kind of leveling the playing field, you know, between average citizens and the government. HB 69 did something unusual. Well, there's a couple things unusual about it. We'll just talk about this particular change, but one change this law did was to say that now you will have to meet a much higher burden to recover attorney's fees if you win against the government. It talked a lot of like First Amendment attorneys who say that this new standard, which is called bad faith, is incredibly high. It's almost an impossible burden to meet to prove that the other side, you know, is not only wrong in, you know, withholding records, but, you know, acted in bad faith. It's very difficult burden. So, you know, the concern that I had initially, my first thought was like, well, that's really unfortunate because there are, you know, sometimes rare cases where like you do have to take it to court. And in my career, that's happened a couple times. And, you know, it's not something where I could afford really to just pay for attorneys to fight that records battle if they didn't have this expectation that they would likely be able to recover their attorney's fees. And so that was a big concern for me. It was more of a concern, though, was actually looking at this, a potential consequence of this legislation, which would be that, you know, if you're in a position where it will be very difficult, if not impossible, for your attorneys, you know, to recover attorney fees, then that puts you in the position of having to pay all of those attorney costs with no expectation of recovery. And in a, you know, a records battle could cost, you know, over $100,000, you know, and you got to think about like what average citizen could afford to shell out that money just to get records. And honestly, what kind of media organization can actually afford a protracted legal battle like that? I don't know if some people might still be under the illusion that there are some wealthy, deep-pocketed local news organizations, but I can tell you, even the ones that are doing good are not doing so good that they could afford to spend six figures on a records battle. So if you are the government and you know that it's unlikely that a records denial will be fought in court because the other side can't afford it and they no longer have this ability to have their attorney's fees recovered, well, I see a definite incentive for some government agencies to just deny any request they don't like. It's hard to see what is the consequences. And, you know, in that little editorial I did where I talked about, like, you know, spending your taxpayer dollars to hide secrets, you got to realize the kind of the perverse reality of this potential scenario I'm talking about is that you might be trying to find out how your government is spending your tax dollars. And in doing so, they may be using their, you know, the attorney for that agency, whether it's city attorney, a county attorney, assistant attorney general, funded with your tax dollars, to fight your denial and take it to court and say, no, we don't agree with their request. We don't agree with the state records committee decision says. We feel like this should be settled in court. So they take it to court knowing that it will likely stop right there. That is a big concern. And when I talk about like records battles potentially costing six figures, this is something I know firsthand. My nonprofit, the Utah Investigative Journalism Project, started in 2019. I was started looking into an organization called Big Game Forever, and they received millions of dollars from taxpayers in this effort to delist the gray wolf. And they're a nonprofit. They got this taxpayer money, and they're involved in lobbying and education and outreach things. They wanted to delist the gray wolf because they're concerned about gray wolves entering into Utah and depleting our big game population, deer, elk, etc. And when I started looking into this organization, I realized that they had a report that they had to provide that would list how they were spending this money. And they blacked out the names of subcontractors. And I was like, how are you justifying this? Like, the public doesn't get to know who you're giving this money to? And they argued that that was a trade secret. These subcontractors, if it was known who they were, it would affect their ability to do their work. And I challenged that at the State Records Committee in 2020. State Records Committee agreed with me. They said, this is not a trade secret. So they took it to court. And, I have a small nonprofit. I reached out to some First Amendment attorneys at Parr, Brown, Key, and Loveless. And I said, look, I think this was a clear case of, that these are public records. And they agreed. And they agreed to take on the case. But we litigated, I say we, they did on my behalf, litigated that case for almost 4 years. And finally, last year we got the records and could see that, the head of that nonprofit was taking some of that money and had hired his little brother to do work. And that's where some of the money was going to. And, my attorneys were able to recover, I think it was close to, if not more than $150,000, because from the state in attorney's fees, because that's the amount of work they had to put into something like that. So these things are expensive. Would I have been able to afford to fight that records battle if I knew that was a sunk cost? I was never getting it back. No, I don't have that budget. I would not have been able to get those records. And so I think that's, I hope that kind of demonstrates to people why this should be concerning. And again, like I said before, these types of my initial thought was it doesn't always go to court. That's pretty rare. I've been reporting and doing this kind of work for about 16, 17 years now. And I think that's the second time I've gone to court for records. But again, it could change, the playing field now if any government agency is we'll just take it to court because they know they can't. So that'll be that. It doesn't matter, if we're, misreading the law. We know that they will have an incredibly high burden to jump, and it will discourage most attorneys from trying to do anything pro bono.
Where is HB 69? That I think it passed, didn't it?
Yes, it has passed, and I don't. I know it has passed, and I know as well that I feel like this is something that was just going to double check really quickly the status on that, because yeah, I believe it has passed the House and the Senate. It is ready to be signed by the governor. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think it is still something that people should be concerned about. Even if everything I've said you disagree with, you think maybe that's maybe I'm just considering only the negatives on this thing. That it's not going to be that bad. This is legislation that I think it's important probably to talk to your lawmakers about, and talk to them about the process, because House Bill 69 did a lot more than everything I just talked about. In fact, when it was introduced, none of this attorney's fees language was in it. The actual bill had a lot to do with making sure that certain election information was kept private, and that election clerks would not access certain types of information. It was actually a pretty popular bill. I don't know if your listeners are aware the legislative process, but ideally, you introduce legislation, it goes to a standing committee. I think this was government ops. There's various committees, and in that committee, the committee, the bill sponsor is going to say, "Hey, this is what my bill does." Members of the committee will ask questions. Then they'll say, "Okay, now we're going to have members of the public come up and comment." And the public weighs in, and they say they like it, or they say they don't like it. And that stuff helps influence the debate, might lead to changes, etc. So with HB 69, though, none of this attorney's fee stuff was in any of the committee hearings. I believe there were two. And so it wasn't until it passed through all the committees, and there's no longer any more opportunity for the public to weigh in, that then on the Senate floor, Senator Calvin Musselman, West Haven, he introduces this amendment. And this amendment deals with the attorney fees. So it's very different from the entire rest of the bill. Now the public has had no opportunity to comment one way or the other, and the bill passes at that point, after the public has effectively been cut out of any input on this legislation.
You raise a good point. The Deseret News had a kind of a retrospective and took us back to, I'd forgotten, but they reminded me, 2011, House Bill 477, which was a previous attempt to limit, to gut the Sunshine process, the GRAMA. That bill was passed Senate and House, signed by Governor Herbert. And then there was such I guess, an outcry from the public. The governor called the legislature back into special session, and they repealed HB 477. So I guess, still opportunity for you, if you oppose this, to get with your legislature and legislator and try to change this.
Yes, yeah, and I think the legislature is still in session. It's still possible that I think it's still possible that new legislation could be brought up that would kind of challenge that attorney's fees amendment, and that way then the leadership would have to kind of reconcile the differences, but would still allow House Bill 69, 90% of it, that appeared to be very uncontroversial, to remain in effect. But barring that, it is also, of course, possible that it could be vetoed, repealed. There are still options, though they are much fewer now at this late stage in the game. But yeah, the legislature is still in session. There's still time to address these issues and maybe give the public an actual chance to discuss this very unique and surprise addition to House Bill 69.
Up on your website, you have an article on, keeping track of legislation and contacting your legislature. What legislator? What would you say about that? How How would you suggest somebody, maybe you've convinced somebody here, hey, I don't like HB 69. I'd like to, advocate against it. How would you go about that?
Well, I think you should say that, with my nonprofit, I think I've only done two editorials, and I'm only really focused on these matters when it comes to issues of transparency and open government. And I think I would encourage anybody who is curious about this to, do more research. I mean, it may be the fact that you feel you're curious about the bill. There's more you want to learn. You can go to the legislature's website. You can look up the bill. You can easily go listen to the hearings. Even though the amendment didn't have a committee hearing, there was a very brief discussion about it on the House floor. And, there were some arguments back and forth. I recommend anybody do a little bit of research about what they want, even beyond just taking my side of it. But if you do that, lawmakers are responsive to constituents. I think it's easy for some people to feel that they're disconnected from the process, but that's not the case. Lawmakers really want to hear from the public. And so if you have an opinion one way or another after you've done a little bit of homework, it's not too difficult to, go to le.utah.gov. If you're new to that site, there is an area where you can, let me just pull up something real quick, where you can find your legislator. Make sure I remember where it's at, but it's, if you just, on the main page of that le.utah.gov, if you scroll underneath, right at the top, there's kind of a calendar, kind of lets you know what's happening in the month, what's happening today in terms of committees that are being heard. But underneath that, there's on the right, there's a box that says quick links, trending bills, find your legislator. You can click on find your legislator and it'll bring up a map. You can put in your address and your zip code, and then it'll tell you exactly who your lawmakers are. Give you a chance to click on a little profile of them and then contact information for them. The legislative website is pretty good for keeping you tapped into who your lawmakers are, how to reach out to them, what's happening on the Hill today, next week, tomorrow, et cetera.
Well, thank you very much. So we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I want to talk about the other bill affecting grandma. Senator Mikkel's bill, Senate Bill 277. We're talking about GRAMA, the Government Records Access and Management Act. A couple of bills would greatly affect this act. And we're talking with Eric Peterson, Executive Director of the Utah Investigative Journalism Project. More following this brief break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about Utah's Government Records Access and Management Act, or GRAMA. This is the act, the process by which citizens and others get to ask for government records, see what government is getting up to. Media organizations, of course, nonprofits like our guest today, the Utah Investigative Journalism Project. We're talking with the Executive Director, Eric Peterson, and a lot of private citizens as well use this. This session, legislators are proposing pretty big changes to this. For example, Senate Assistant Majority Whip Senator Mike Mikkel is suggesting the open records process needs an overhaul. We talked about another bill, House Bill 69, earlier in the program. Utah Media Coalition and others say the system is working well and the proposed changes would make it harder for citizens to find out what state government is doing. So we're talking about that with Eric Peterson with Utah Investigative Journalism Project. I should note that we did invite Senator McKell to come on the program. We're not able to work that out. We invited some other legislators. That didn't work out either, so we're grateful for Mr. Peterson for telling us about this. So let's move to this this other bill that I mentioned, Senator McKell's Senate Bill 277. What would this do?
So Senate Bill 277 is interesting because what Senator McKell's proposed is an effort to kind of like streamline the way that records disputes are heard and decided on. I mentioned briefly before that we've got the State Records Committee in Utah, which is a very unique thing. We've got this independent body of people, they're volunteers, and they'll meet once a month, and they will hear these different records disputes. Now, like if you go to the State Records Committee, it's an interesting experience because it will kind of feel like you're playing a lawyer all of a sudden. Like you'll sit at one side of a table and you talk about your records, why you think you should get up. And you'll literally probably be arguing against an attorney. They're a city attorney, a county attorney, someone from the attorney general's office. And this independent body will kind of hear the disputes, they'll ask questions, and they'll make a decision. And they'll say, you know what, we should release these records, we shouldn't release these records. And, you know, the State Records Committee is independent and has a membership that's kind of, I think, kind of uniquely designed to kind of be representative of the community, right? Like there's somebody who is an advocate, you know, they represent just the citizenry, just the public. There's somebody that kind of represents the media. There's somebody that represents like cities and towns, like local government. Somebody that represents like government, you know, private business. And they have a lot of power, and they're really unique in the sense that, like, you know, up until that point, when you've been saying, hey, I want these records, and the government agency says no, well, you're just taking the government agency at their word. But when you go to the State Records Committee, you have the option to have them look at these records. They call it in camera, which means they kind of excuse themselves and go into a private room and look at the records themselves. And you get an independent set of eyes on those records, and, you know, and they will listen, you know, objectively to your arguments, both sides' arguments, of course. Problem has been that the State Records Committee has dealt with a growing backlog. I don't know if it's, I think it's just grandma's just a very popular tool. More people are becoming active, engaged with it. And so there are also more disputes about what should be released and what shouldn't. So the State Records Committee has been having a lot of slow turnaround time. You know, it's typically, or just speaking anecdotally here, but like, you know, if you file an appeal with the State Records Committee, it's probably going to be scheduled out at least 3 months, possibly more. And you also had like a problem that, you know, there's situation at the like last fall where, like, you know, new members needed to be appointed and those confirmations got held up by the legislature, adding to the backlog. So McKell's bill will try and kind of change the process, something that's kind of similar to other states do it, where instead of a committee, you're going to have a director, and they're kind of like an administrative law judge. I mean, they're going to be a lawyer, and, you know, they will still kind of make decisions. You'll still file appeals with them. There should be hearings, as I understand. Although the bill's still kind of in flux, and they will make a decision. And so that has a benefit of, like, you know, there will be, you know, somebody with a lot of legal experience in this area should be able to make decisions more quickly. So there are positives to it. I know there's a lot of people that are frustrated with the pace of records appeals and how much it's been backlogged. But again, you have that trade-off. And that trade-off is, you know, you have this new director who is just one person, right? And they are appointed by the governor. They're approved by, I believe, the Senate. And according to like the language of SB 277, the governor may remove this person with or without cause at any time. So there's a real question of like, yeah, this could be better, but you also don't know. You got to ask yourself, like, well, what if, I mean, is that too much influence that like the governor might have over this one person, versus a committee? I mean, we know like committees sometimes are unwieldy and might move slower, but it is a kind of deliberative process where they are hashing things out and kind of coming to consensus and operating that way. So the this director might be more efficient, but there's the potential that they could be more beholden to, legislators and the governor, that could influence potentially how they decide cases. The legislation has been greatly, greatly improved. The first version of this bill, when it was introduced, had talked about taking something out of grammar called the balancing test. And that was something that made a lot of people nervous. The Utah Media Coalition, the Utah Society of Professional Journalists, was very concerning. Give a quick explainer, I guess. The balancing test is this unique thing in Utah law that says that when, if a government agency classifies a record as private or protected, there's still the possibility that it could be made public if you weigh these competing interests. And on one hand, you have the government's right to secrecy. Now, like, maybe we need to keep this record secret. It'll affect an investigation we're doing or some kind of ongoing budget discussion or privacy interests. And then you have the public's right to know. And the balancing test said, if the public's right to know is equal to or greater, then you can make a private record or protected record, make it public, which is an incredible tool for the public. And also one that's not really been abused like some might think it has. It's a rare kind of thing that happens, but it can happen that there is an issue that is such burning interest to the public that a government agency or the state records committee might say, you know what, the public's right to know in this case outweighs the government's interest in secrecy. So initially, Mikhail's bill was going to get rid of the balancing tests, and that would have taken a really useful tool out of the toolbox for the public, legislators, and even government agencies. There are some government agencies, for example, that have used the balancing test and kind of proactively said, upon receiving a records request, to say, you know what, this record is technically private, but we feel like it should be released. That option would even be taken away from the government if the balancing test had gone away. So, Mikhail, I think he like received a lot of feedback about that, especially, and he took that out of the bill, which you got to, I think that was a very smart move, and I think that was really showed his responsiveness to the public's concern about that. The bill itself, it's still, I think it's still being hashed out, and there's a competing bill. I was just trying to. There's another bill that would keep the State Records Committee, but make some changes. Add a new member, I think, that would represent law enforcement, for example. And so these two bills are kind of at odds, right? Like they are not both
both going to get passed. You can't pass a bill that gets rid of the state records committee and another one that will expand it. So that is still something that will be remain to be seen how where lawmakers decide on kind of future of the state records committee.
I believe SB 277 is passed out of committee, right? I believe not yet passed out of the Senate. It would have to go to the House after that, I believe.
Correct. It did pass out of the committee. It was close. There was a lot of opposition, but it did pass out of the committee. And yeah, I don't think it has yet moved to the House, but I think it's pretty close.
So it sounds like the bill that you don't have as many concerns about had public debate. It was and changes to it based on public response. The bill you're more concerned about was kind of snuck through, I guess, and you would opponents would see it that way. HB 69.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting, like comparing that to like, you know, I think reporters, especially like we like to think that we're really on top of these things and we understand the process and we know how to read legislation. But one thing that was like really interesting in watching the committee hearing for SB 277, Mikhail's bill that would have got rid of the state records committee, is that the public, there's a lot of public comment. And I remember like one member of the public got up and pointed out and he said, hey, this bill language says that this new, you know, one-man records committee, this new director, can be terminated without cause by the governor. And that was actually something I totally missed. And I talked with other reporters and like, oh, yeah, I didn't even notice that. You know, I was so fixated on what are they going to do to the balancing test that I missed that thing. And I think that was like really interesting input. And I think that's probably something that, you know, if there's a new version of this bill, sponsors probably trying to decide if there's something that needs to be tweaked there. You know, I think that input was really valuable to the sponsor for that legislation. The thing that's like really concerning too about House Bill 69 is that you can envision a situation where there is, and this happens often in sessions, right? That there is there's like a cleanup that's needed, right? Like there's something in the statute that needs a technical change of some kind. You know, they need to go in and tweak a little thing because it actually doesn't mesh up or there was unintended consequences. It's kind of like a little correction to the law. You know, there's a very normal way that like a legislator might go and make a floor amendment to a bill and say, hey, this is relevant to your bill. We just need to do a little tweak here. This is something we can kind of handle as lawmakers. But when you look at that process for House Bill 69, that amendment is very entirely different from what was going on in the rest of that bill. You know, the rest of the bill is talking about election-related records. And then suddenly this bill is talking about, oh, okay, the government now has the edge, the significant edge in records battles that go to court. Right? It's very different setup, right? And that process, I think that process should be concerning. When they had they did have, you know, a brief kind of debate on the Senate floor about this. You know, there were issues raised and say about amount of money that was being spent paying for attorney's fees in these types of disputes. There is a concern brought up that, hey, this is costing taxpayers money because we have to pay the other side's attorney fees. If that was a consideration, I mean, if that was a prime consideration, then you got to ask yourself, like, okay, well, when did this concern pop up? Did it just barely pop up? And that's why this was put in at the last minute after the committees happened? Or were people, you know, handling the accounting for the state, were they well aware of this? Well before the session started, knew it was a problem, you know, and if that's the case, Why didn't it have its own bill file? Why didn't it have its own bill dedicated just to this issue that would, you know, focus the public's attention on this distinct issue, give them the chance to talk about it? You know, why is it a surprise to the public? Was it a surprise to the government, or did they know about it well in advance? And if so, why the surprise for the public? Why was it introduced this way? Why did the process happen that way? And is it the process the public deserves?
Just have a couple minutes left. I'd like to, pull back, look at this in a macro. Let's stipulate, of course, you don't want this, but let's say House Bill 69 stands. That's the one you're more concerned about. And that you're right, this has a chilling effect. Fewer citizens, file because they can't afford a lawsuit, or media organizations can't afford it. What would be lost here?
Well, I think, it's easy. I think it's easy for somebody to look at, I can envision somebody, they're working, in the government kind of budget office where they have to they're adding up a spreadsheet looking and going, oh man, the government had to pay out attorney's fees for this and this and this. And you can imagine a scenario where they say, well, if we just change the law and we don't have to pay that anymore, then we'll be saving the taxpayer dollars this much. Look at all this money we'll be saving the taxpayer dollars. What that accounting person is doing is not looking at the opportunity cost, right? Then you talk about in economics about, what are the alternative scenarios that we're not envisioning? If it's easier for the government to hide secrets, does that benefit the taxpayer? Or is that going to lead to bad policy, bad programs, bad decisions, things that actually cost the taxpayer a lot more than even significant legal bills that we have to pay? My feeling is that transparency is something that's really good for government, really good for the fiscal health of a government. Accountability in that process will motivate, government agencies to do things in a better way, knowing that they're going to be accountable to the public. If they have no incentive, if there's not a concern about paying, the other side's attorney's fees, well, why not fight these things all the way through court? I mean, the reason why these types of legal battles are not that common is because most government agencies say, look, it's going to cost us this much money if we lose, and we're likely to lose, so we're not going to do it. We're going to have to turn over these records, and that's the way it is. But, closed government is costly government. Open government is, effective government. It's fiscally effective. It's government that people have confidence in. It's government that people trust and are glad to support.
Well, thank you so much. We're at the end of our time here. We've been talking about Utah's Government Records Access and Management Act. A couple of bills would greatly affect it this session. Just to recap, House Bill 69, look that one up, and Senate Bill 277. There's another one, I'm not sure the number, Eric, that's would affect this as well. We encourage you to do some research on that and contact your legislator if you have concerns about this. We've been talking with Eric Peterson, Executive Director of the Utah Investigative Journalism Project. Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you for having me.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah Today.
Every rural person and place has a story. Change is part of that story. Rural Utah at a Crossroads is part of the Smithsonian Traveling Exhibit Crossroads, Change in Rural America, which explores the changing meaning of rural life and identity. Utah Humanities is touring Crossroads to 8 rural communities across Utah in 2024. As part of the tour, Utah Humanities and Utah Public Radio are partnering with exhibition hosts to interview local residents about change in their communities. This interview was recorded at the USU Eastern Campus in Price, Utah.
My name is Shelley Denise Samples McKinnon. I was actually born here in Price. My grandfather was a coal miner. My dad was a coal miner. My brother was killed in the coal mine. You know, it's like family generations, because that's all they knew. I was working for MSHA. So I was working for the Federal Coal Mine Inspectors. It worked out because I at least had things in common with my coal mining family. I knew which mines were up and running and which ones were doing long haul overloads. When I went to training, they arranged for us to go to an underground mine, an ore mine. And I was so shocked. It's like an underground city. 25 foot tall seams. They had diesel equipment running, like big trucks running back and forth. And then they took us off into a section of the mine that didn't have a lot of activity. And they told us to put our hands in front of our face and then turn off our cap lamp and want to know which ones could see. It was just pitch black. I could see how people would get turned around. I would panic if my light never came back on. So it was scary. It was interesting, but it was scary too. Our coal has higher BTUs than, say, Kentucky. And our coal seams are higher. So you could actually walk into the mine, where Kentucky has to ride in on a cart on their bellies. So, you know, those are things I didn't know, because all I knew was Utah coal. So that was strange to find out that, you know, they had to crawl around on their bellies to mine coal. So that was weird. I think now for my children to find employment, they have to leave the state. And that's heartbreaking. Everybody wants their children near them. But if there's no employment and there's no housing market, then they have to go. Helper was established because they needed help getting over Soldier Summit. So they used the little helper engine. And Price has always been a coal community. I was involved in the last rebranding of the county. And they wanted to bypass our coal mining history. But I feel like it's not something you should erase. I mean, of course we're going to change because coal is bad. But, you know, it's what brought these people here. It's what established this location. So I think we should acknowledge that and pay respect to that. You know, they were saying what a gem it was, what a diamond in the rough. But what they found out in the end was it wasn't the coal that was the gem, it was the community. I love this place. I have always loved this place. It's easy for me to stay because I love it so much. But it has everything I like to do. Camping and fishing and hunting and horseback riding, you know, all that stuff. So I'll always love Utah.
Rural Utah at a Crossroads is produced by Maya Shumway. It is a collaboration between Utah Public Radio, Utah Humanities, and the community hosts of Crossroads, Change in Rural America, a Smithsonian Museum on Main Street exhibition made possible in the Beehive State by Utah Humanities. Support for Museum on Main Street has been provided by the United States Congress. Broadcast of Rural Utah at a Crossroads on UPR is supported by our members,